Over time, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and two times the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the NRF1 podcast. Sincerest apologies that we have been... Hang on. Have we not done one of these since the summer break? Is that right? Is this the first one we've done since the summer break? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, everyone. That have only just hit me. It was the one race in 7 weeks that obviously did me in. I'll take full responsibility. But my name is Michael Bailey. Welcome to the NRF1 podcast. We are back for a look back at Italy and Belgium. We're going to kind of shoehorn them into one podcast and see how much we can remember of them. But as I said, sorry for the recent radio silences. Two races, though, and to be honest, I'm quite confident we can squeeze it all into this one podcast. There is loads to discuss. We have loads to get through. So we should do that, and I will introduce you to the panel. You've already heard Kyle Cumbers' voice. Yeah, it's not a good plural, is it, really, Kyle? Hey, well?
I'm very well. Had a good summer.
Yeah, I was going to say, we do need to do that conversation now. What did you do? Did you go on holiday?
No, I'm going later this month to Turkey.
Turkey? Yes. Very nice.
Formula One news is the track, Istanbul track, is being turned into a car dealership.
So they can't use it as a track anymore?
Which is a great track, wasn't it? No, we went, but...
What about the four Apex Turn 8?
Exactly. That's a complete waste, yeah.
And what was it, £120 million they spent on it? Something like that.
Yeah. They're ripping up the whole surface.
I don't know. I just heard the headline saying it's turning into a car dealership.
Well, what you do is you buy a car and ask if you can test drive it around the track, I presume.
Oh yeah, of course.
Then we'd be tempted to all buy a car from there.
See, we're going all at your turkey now.
Exactly. £120 million well spent. Clearly, good stuff. You've already heard him. Steve and Rust is here. Steve, welcome back. It's been a few weeks. Probably partly my fault as well with some of the emails.
I can't even remember the last podcast I did. I was saying before to Kyle, I think I probably remember doing Monaco, and that was well, I can't remember doing one after that. Whether I have, I don't know. But yeah,
nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good to have you back in the studio. I say studio. We're in reception, but that's fine. Richard Baxter's here. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Good evening.
Now, how has your summer been?
Sort of non-existent, really, so far.
Oof.
I had a week off last week, which was great. So, except we never really had proper summer weather yet. We had 2 weeks, I think, of real hot sunshine.
Snooze you lose, wasn't it, I suppose? It's not been a great few weeks weather-wise, but alas, Norfolk did have some nice weeks, so I guess that was your lot, really. Right, let's get stuck straight into this, shall we, before we do the weather report. Let's start... Well, we have to start with Lewis Hamilton, I suppose, because he won both races. He was in total charge of both races. The man's in dominant form, and given he's just won in Monza... That is title challenge over, isn't it? All done and dusted. Anyone want to argue with me?
No, but an interesting statistic is that he can now afford to finish second to Rosberg if Rosberg win every single race and still win.
Ouch, he's like 53 points, is it?
Yeah. So he can afford to finish second, assuming Rosberg finishes all the races in first and still win.
So he could actually not win another race and still become world champion. And this is... I think I heard that actually at this point last year Rosberg was still leading the championship, plus we had double points at Abu Dhabi. I mean, this is another level, isn't it?
Yes. It's one of those things. All season we've mentioned it a few times, is the championship over? I've tried to kind of find a glimmer of hope to keep it alive, referring to last year, how it was 29 points, I think, wasn't it, and then Hamilton caught up and won. But this year, to be honest, I'm running out of he's 53 points ahead. Is a long way. I mean, he could obviously this weekend Rosberg failed to finish. Hamilton can do that twice and still be leading. So it's quite a big gap to have, to be honest.
it's over. And I mean, the Constructors' Championship as well, I mean, that's a little bit close. No, it's not any closer at all. It's probably more done and dusted.
Yeah, I think they're 180 points ahead Mercedes, so. But yeah, I mean, even on Hamilton Rosberg, Hamilton doesn't look like getting beat. Even if he has a couple of bad races, a bit of bad luck, he still DNFs the next two races. He still fancy him to win the championship, because Rosberg just doesn't look like he can beat him. So
he even looks good in blonde hair.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, was it?
No, it was very bad.
I thought it was quite a good. Was it like a strategic thing to do? Because apparently, when he's at the press conference, the first four questions were about his hair. So instead of all the other nonsense about, you know, that and Rosberg, is it a.
Maybe it all is. I mean,
divert the media's attention.
If you look on the NRF1 Twitter feed, well, what is it? What is the NRF1? The NRF1. Thanks, Rich. I'm glad someone pays attention. We posted Lewis Hamilton's video from his summer. So he had a very good summer.
Yeah. Nothing compared to that. To look a good few weeks.
Maybe it's all part of his grand plan to distract us all with weird stuff, and then he goes and wins all the races. And
what I find funny is that he swans off to LA between that and the last race, randomly decides to just go get his hair dyed blonde, have a little bit of time, you know, travelling about, turns up at Italy, tops every single session, wins the race by a massive margin, and then just sits and answers questions about his hair.
I mean, he really has got it made at the moment, hasn't he? Let's be honest.
Yeah. Life's pretty good, isn't it, for him at the moment?
Absolutely got it made. And we factoring into how dead these titles are at the moment was the great line from Lewis. I think it was after qualifying, where Lewis Hamilton had apparently told Lee McKenzie, he had, because I'd seen it. It'd be good for Nico to sort out his car so they can pick up some points for the team this weekend. And when Lee McKenzie retold that to Nico, he gave it the patronising response it deserved, probably, because it was like, what the hell is he? Hang on, I'm still in the title. I mean, he's not now, obviously, but, you know, it was a bit like, thanks, Lewis. Brilliant. So maybe that was it's good that Lewis has been in the sort of distraction technique rather than winding up Nico Rosberg. But it did wind Nico up, so that was quite.
Maybe that's why he did it, because obviously Rosberg has got quite blonde locks. So, I mean, maybe Hamilton just thought, this will be a bit of a twist.
The look will work, maybe.
Rosberg sort of laughed. He said, apparently, when they were growing up, that Hamilton took the mick out of his blonde locks, and now he's gone blonde, which he seemed to find quite funny. So,
we should touch on Nico, I suppose, as well, in terms of his engine blowout and everything that happened there. It was quite an interesting race in Monza, most definitely, but Nico's engine, his new engine blew, did it? I think in practice.
Oh, his new, yeah.
His new one blew.
I think it was like a coolant problem.
It was a little issue. So,
I believe it was, yeah. Which then corrupted something else in his engine. Yeah. So
they had to stick a 6-race-old engine in his car and keep their fingers crossed. I mean, could they not have got another engine? Would they really not?
I think they've only used two so far. I think they used the first one up to Canada. In every session, didn't they?
Yeah, the new engine that they had to take out was number 3. Because the new one was, first one, new one was in Canada, wasn't it? Obviously, that would have been 2. Yeah, so it would have been number 3. Yeah, that was number 3.
So, I don't get it.
So they could have built an older one.
They could have put number 4 in for one race and then gone back to the one that they are now going to use. That did fail.
I suppose they only take 2 engines to each race, do they? I don't know.
Maybe they didn't have another one.
But yeah, because after certain points of the weekend, you get into parc fermé conditions where if you have an engine change, even if it's inside your allocation, you get penalties for it.
There must have been a grid penalty issue.
I think that's what it was, mainly. Because obviously we had this weekend both McLarens, was it both Red Bulls and one of the Toro Rossos with a grid penalty, I think.
Probably.
Positions back or something like that.
Well, we'll get into more of that later, most definitely. So a bit of a shame then, really, that they couldn't do anything else for Nico. I suppose the engine blowing was like a ticking time bomb, really, wasn't it?
3 laps to go, was it? So it was nearly there.
Well, there's a consolation. I'm sure he thought as much. It wasn't the best of weekends for him. We haven't really touched on Spa. I don't know if that's because we don't remember it or because we didn't like it, or it's old. Let's be honest, it is a race old. But which of the two did we prefer? the Belgian Grand Prix or the Italian Grand Prix? I'm going to give you a moment.
Personally, for me, it's always Spa because that's just my favourite race. I love Monza, and I mean, it's great because obviously the crowds and the circuit's fast, and it's a bit of fun as well with the tight chicanes in there. But Spa is just the ultimate for me. That's my top favourite.
I've got some cracking overtakes at Spa. And Verstappen pulled one out. I can't remember who it was on, but it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was at the weekend as well when I can't remember who he braked into the first corner. Was you right when they outside again?
Outside of Blanchimont, yes. I think he did in Spa.
That's right. Yeah.
So
I'll probably just go Monza. But I did quite like Grosjean getting on the podium in Spa. So that's
stunning result that was.
It's a tough one. I'll just go Monza because I thought it was a slightly better race.
That's fine. Steve?
Spa for me. Always Spa.
Always Spa.
Yeah. Always Spa. Brilliant.
What about you?
I preferred Spa. I thought the racing was better. Yeah, I did. I did. But I enjoy them both. They're both such great classic circuits that they need to not be removed from the calendar for bullshit financial reasons, which I think is a direct quote from Sebastian Vettel. So there we go. It was reasonably easy for Hamilton. I suppose both of them were, really. He was clear and well ahead and never really troubled, apart from a few issues, which we'll get onto in a moment. But he's now one win off Senna's record of consecutive pole positions of 7. I think that's right.
There's another record as well that he's possibly about to break of Senna's. I think it's the amount of wins in a certain number of, or within a certain number of races.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, could he equal it? I can't remember how it works.
I think it was 41, is it?
Yeah. I think he's equal to it, yeah. But I think if he wins the next race, he will actually break that record.
So, proper stuff. And Lewis Hamilton, I no doubt, love the fact that he's picking up records that were previously owned by Ayrton Senna. But he did have to deal with a few late wobbles in Italy. Curious radio messages, which were fascinating because they were literally telling him what to do without telling him why. He was properly, what's going on? And this was, of course, all down to the tyre pressure being possibly too low. Well, it was too low, but then it was because of when they measured it. So there was no further repercussions. What do we all make of all this?
I can understand the decision. Because this is a new rule, they just didn't get how to, I don't know, referee it. They didn't make the rules for that. So obviously there's enough doubt, so I think it's fair enough for the decision. The radio messages were, was everybody trying to work out what they were talking about?
Yeah.
That was quite a good fun bit of it. Yeah. That couldn't be, because you thought if these under investigation, surely that would have come up at the bottom of the screen like everybody else. Yeah. So I thought, it can't be that. And then if they've got a mechanical problem, they'll just come in. But made a bit of excitement towards the end. I thought he was quite calm, actually, Hamilton.
Well, it's all the
don't ask questions, just execute was the term. I thought, Jesus Christ,
literally do not talk about it, we're not talking about it here. It was like maybe it's the peroxide in his hair, so it's, you know, it's given him, so it's calmed him all down. So the result stood in the end. The tyre pressures all became off topic, of course, because in Belgium Sebastian Vettel's tyre blew,
and Rosberg's as well.
Therefore Pirelli brought these sort of guidelines on how long tyres can be used for, which seems sensible. And then surely it's up to the teams whether they go too long, and if they go too long, that's their own fault, which to me still seemed like the issue with Ferrari, but maybe I'm being harsh.
Yeah, I think the guidelines was with these tyre pressures as well, wasn't it? But I mean, just going back to like the whole tyre pressure saga, one thing I found questionable is these readings were taken whilst they were on the grid before they started, and they're there for two reasons, allegedly safety and, you know, make sure people are effectively aren't cheating. So I mean, they knew that before the start of the race. So why were they allowed? Why wasn't anything said then? Why did they wait until after the race or inform them at the end part of the race? The biggest failing point that I think they now realise that they've made, not Mercedes, the actual sort of FIA, is that they didn't really stipulate any particular time, you know, that when you can take them, because apparently when you take the blankets off, they lose pressure. And it was due to the fact that Mercedes had taken theirs off quite early. And then they came round and read them, and then they were under pressure. I'm sure that's one way that they kind of get round it and get lower pressures, because they say, well, yes, we've got the readings here, and with the person from Pirelli can confirm that the right tyre pressure was put in, but I'm certain they take the blankets off just to get the pressures down, you know, to help them in the race. But yeah, they didn't stipulate any particular time. They just said, well, we're going to take tyre pressure readings, and if it's below, it's going to be below, and we're going to penalise you for it. But I think they
or not
realised that the error in their sort of procedure to it, really.
You'd have just thought they'd have come up with a proper way of measuring it and realise there'd be an issue when they're doing this.
So I can say, because also reading it is just as you, yes, you can lose.
There you go.
You can lose a little bit as well.
Yeah, you can
pump up your tyres. You can lose a bit when you're trying to put it in. So there's that human bit, and also, was it just the tyres at the start, or was it the pit stops? Were they looked into?
Just the start. So, it was when they were on the grid, the tyres that they started on, that they measured and found to be under.
Yeah. But then why? But were they looking at other tyres during the race that were sort of through pit stops and stuff? Were they looking at them? I didn't hear anything.
Yeah. No, not that I'm aware of.
No. I found, to be honest, when I first heard it, I thought, is this a bit of a Cosa Nostra move? Mafia move, because
you and your conspiracy theories, you love it.
Did you see the Fiat Ferrari boss in the garage though? He's the most mafia man I've ever seen. He never smiled. He just kind of stood there staring at people, and as someone smiling went to shake his hand, he shook his hand. I was like, oh my, it looks like he's going to kill him. I don't want to cause an offence or anyone to hunt me down for this, but I thought, you know, an Italian car winning the Italian Grand Prix with Italian tyres, I mean, would have obviously been ideal for the Tifosi, but...
How dare you suggest the Mafia could have any influence in such a pure sport as Formula One, Richard? I don't know where we stand on that one. There were a few boos for Lewis Hamilton as well on the podium. Do we make much of that? Is it literally just because he isn't a Ferrari driver?
I think so, yeah.
It's a bit weird, wasn't it? What's the point?
There was another race earlier in the season where I think he got booed. Or a few boos, but... They did eventually with Vettel after he was winning all the time.
4 years, though, yeah.
Schumacher was another one that eventually got booed, you know, through winning all the time. I think you just get some fans there that just be like, oh, I'm sick of seeing the same guy, you know.
Weirdos. Let's have the NRF1 pit stops. First garage, Ferrari, I suggest. We've kind of touched on the tyre issues from Belgium, but Sebastian Vettel was quite outspoken afterwards. Thought it was a little bit harsh, actually, but yeah, maybe that's harsher on me. But they turned it all around in Monza. They had great qualifying. Certainly Kimi Raikkonen. If only he'd remembered how to start his car. It must be said that the starts have definitely become a bit more unpredictable. Since they've, I like this, you know, radio silence, not coaching them on how to start the cars properly.
It seems like, so previously you get like a bad start and lose a few places, but it does look like it can all go horribly wrong, which is quite, it's good. It adds a bit to the race. But yeah, the Kimi one was a bit strange, but it just didn't, nothing happened to it. It just didn't like stall, just.
Do you reckon he got it wrong, or do you reckon it was mechanical?
You could see,
we don't know, but I'm just curious what you think.
You're on an onboard shot. You could see he was holding the revs at, you know, a level, and then he released his right hand, which was where there's two clutches, isn't there? There's one you release straight away, the other one you ease in. And he released one, and then it just didn't seem to move. It just stayed there. So was he in neutral, or was it... they were talking on Sky. Then he was talking about where the bite points on the clutch don't properly meet together, but you've got it indicated as a gear or something. So it could have been some technical issue like that. But I did read again on Sky, I think Raikkonen came out and said he did nothing different to usual, and they think they found some issue with the clutch.
Kyle's laughing at that. I mean, it apparently went into anti-stall, but he did, you know, he was fifth going into the first corner. He was last, I'm giving it away. He was last going into the first corner, having started on the front row, but finished fifth. So all in all, you know, he did a pretty good recovery job.
Oh yeah, you can't deny that, really. You know, I mean, he's got a pretty decent car, but he's a pretty decent driver, you know, and Monza is a place you can overtake fairly reasonably, so yeah, I mean, did pretty well. I have to say, actually, with his start, don't know if anyone else spotted it, but Rosberg nearly rammed into the back of him.
Yeah.
That was on Rosberg's onboard. That was really close. Most actually reacted quite quickly.
Rosberg only just avoided the back of him, and Bottas did a really good job of avoiding him too.
Yeah, he was close as well, and I mean, he was going a bit faster, and probably had less time to see him as Rosberg, you know, kind of ducked out last second himself.
Maurizio Arrivabene was quite guarded about Ferrari's prospects after qualifying. I don't think he wanted to tempt fate, and then of course Kimi didn't deliver the goods, but he did finish fifth, which was a cracking recovery drive, most definitely. Ferrari, have they improved their engine? Obviously, and in terms of Nico Rosberg having an older engine, you know, if both McLarens, both Mercedes had that engine, Ferrari could have, you know, won the race, finished above them, and all sorts of fun and games. Is that because Ferrari have made progress?
I think, I think I did hear they, in qualifying, they had a special qualifying mode for their engines, so they're a bit faster, which obviously, you know, make them a bit closer. Now, I suppose they had to be in Monza just to please the fans.
and the mafioso, obviously.
Yeah. But, yeah, with Mercedes, I mean, I heard, as they said, the difference between Hamilton's new engine and Rosberg's old one was about 0.3 seconds. So, I mean, Rosberg would have still been a bit of a way off, but you would have thought it would definitely been a bit tighter anyway.
One thing we do know since we last recorded a podcast, Kyle, is that Kimi Raikkonen is going to be driving for Ferrari next year, which not only gets you a prediction correct that we took before the summer break, but are you surprised?
I am, because as soon as I said it, I was under a bit of pressure to make a prediction. That's the first one that came out.
As if.
That's the first one that came out. As soon as I said that, I thought, well, that's just a nonsense. That's never going to happen. But
it was literally a week later. It was as if you knew.
Yeah. But at the time I thought, because the Bottas rumours sort of died down a bit, and they're sort of like, again, he was beaten by Massa. So, and they got rid of Massa, didn't they? So maybe it's just an easy one-year option for them, and then they can go from there, really. But
maybe there's someone they really want to get that they know they can get in another year's time, possibly.
Ricardo, possibly.
Yeah, maybe. We'll get on to Daniel later as well. Right, okay, let's shift this up a gear, shall we? Unlike Kimi. Williams. I've got, the only note I've got here next to Williams is that Massa's son appears to be following him around everywhere. He was by his side again after the
press conference, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he came in, what do they call it, the little pen thing they have, and he just randomly, oh, your son's there, and then they quickly had a big hug, and it's like, such a pro, isn't he?
It was actually nice to see the two Williams sparring for place on the podium, wasn't it, by the end of it?
Yeah, it was a good little duel between them two, really, actually. You know, I thought that Massa wouldn't hang on to that, actually. I was quite surprised that he did, actually, because I'd rate Bottas more as a better driver than Massa. Some people might disagree with me, but I didn't think he'd hang on to that. But now, full marks for him doing so and grabbed a podium out of it.
Bottas better than Massa?
They each have their days, is what I'd say.
I said Bottas as well ahead, but
thinking of Austria, I'm thinking Massa seems to have the edge there. Whereas other races we've seen, Silverstone, for example, earlier this season, probably Bottas was the best there as well.
I said definitely 6 months ago I said Bottas was better, and I still think he is, but I think next year is a big year for him. If he wants a front top team drive, he's got to beat Massa convincingly each time, and he's not doing it at the moment. So
fair point. Yeah, fair point. We do know as well Williams will keep the same driver lineup next year, so that will be a fascinating one. They made kind of more mistakes, didn't they, Williams? In Belgium, wasn't it, that they put one hard and three soft tyres on the car, which was remarkable. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, they are as soon as Rob Smedley came out and said, we've got to stop making these really stupid errors, they just seem to be making loads more stupid errors. And then they kind of got in a muddle in Monza as well with being with the sort of undercut from Rosberg and things like that.
I thought they could have pitted earlier. It was getting to the point where they thought, just pit one.
Get in.
Just same thing sort of happens every time with them, really. But it was, probably was one of my favourite moments of the season, that the pit stop. Just the bloke walking towards his tyre, like, wait a minute. He's already got one. I'll just turn around. Nothing happened.
It wasn't me, boss. Let's move on to Lotus. Now, we could do a whole podcast solely on Lotus, but we're going to keep it to a few seconds. They had an incredible result. Ever since I started predicting them for mass failure, they were sublime. I think that Roman Grosjean was on the podium. Pastor Maldonado could have had just a good weekend if he didn't have mechanical failure, I think, wasn't it? Or did he crash?
He went over a bump or something, and like a 17 G-force, and did it cut his engine out or something? Which he said was unlucky, but as I sort of said, don't go over any bumps.
Don't go, yeah, stay on the track. Why not? So a brilliant effort from Grosjean. The cars are then impounded because there's a winding up order, I guess, against the team, certainly something like that. They've been through the courts today and it's all been postponed for a couple of weeks, but they're in clearly financial issues. They did get the cars to Monza and both of them were out after the second lap, I think, pretty much. First lap. I gave them an extra lap. And Renault are in big discussions over the future. I was going to come on to that later, but maybe we should touch on it now. Because it sounds like, you know, that Renault deal, they're still umming and ahhing whether to take it over.
Well, I thought it was a done deal. I thought it was all been agreed and was soon to be announced within days. But then it's all gone quiet again, hasn't it?
There's a lot of details. So it's clearly the arrangements are all there. But they might just be waiting. And basically it will be Lotus next year. And then 2017, the team will be back in yellow and back as a Renault team at Enstone. And all the debts will be cleared and everything will be beautiful because it always works like that.
Something they did here which I liked, and credit to him actually, which you didn't hear, Bernie Ecclestone, we often gets quite a lot of grief from people for various things, but apparently he paid the wages for the Lotus staff just to keep them ticking over, to keep them in the, you know, in this season, to help them along that a bit. And I thought that's quite a nice move. I mean, you can obviously afford it.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure the Marussia and Caterham teams are looking at that quite interestingly, but yeah.
I think, hasn't the Maldonado money being held up until this gets sorted or something? So I think
so that'd be all their money then?
Yes, yeah, all 30 million or whatever. So I think that's part of the reason why they're sort of struggling a bit.
Just a bit. Yeah, just a little bit. The FIA I wanted to touch on, Pastor. Just because there are so many penalties, you mentioned it. I mean, at one point, didn't McLaren have 150 grid penalty? I mean, Yeah. I mean, this is just stupid, isn't it? Well, come on.
They have changed it now. So instead of having a million drive-throughs during the race or a stop-go, you now just start at the back of the grid, or I think from the pit lane, depending which is much better. But to be honest, why can't they make an engine work? That's my main...
Because it's not built in Britain.
Okay, well, yeah, that could be one reason. I mean, we'll touch on McLaren now then, shall we? Because before the summer, you said they were going to upgrade the engine because they found their reliability, Kyle. That was what they had said, yeah. I think you were recalling. And we kind of were a bit sceptical about that at the time.
Yeah, and then Mr. Arai came out and said they've got 25 more horsepower than Renault and they're sort of...
So where is it though?
Level with Ferrari and stuff, and it's like, sorry, what have you been watching? I don't understand.
Did you see at Monza the drag race between, was it Sainz of Verstappen, I think it was, and Button? And Button had DRS wide open, and the car in front didn't, and he couldn't even catch him up. Flat out with DRS, couldn't even catch him up. And it's, as you say, where's more than Renault? Okay.
It's just, they're not going anywhere, are they? And like
literally,
because the little start of the season, it's like, well, we could get podiums towards the end of the season. It's like, getting closer to Marussia than
end of what season?
Well, I mean, and the cracks are appearing now, aren't they? They've sort of tried to keep on the right side of each other, but a bit like Renault and Red Bull, it's all kind of falling apart now.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember a few races ago, Eric Boulier, how you pronounce his name. I sort of said, you know, that if it weren't for the problems with the engine, we could definitely unlock like 2 seconds, you know, on a qualifying lap. And I can't remember which race it was, but I compared that to the pole sitter, which was inevitably Mercedes, and they were still nearly 2 seconds off the pace. And I thought, well, that's a massive margin. You know, you're sort of talking 4 or 5 seconds, you know, and for a team like McLaren that spends all of that money, has all the history, it's quite appalling and embarrassing. I mean, they're talking about losing £20 million worth of sponsorship now, you know, because sponsors are just not satisfied that's what they paid their money for.
And they have been struggling as well anyway to get sponsors since Vodafone had left. So
the other amusing thing that I heard fairly recently is one of the, I think I was watching one of the practice sessions that was live on BBC on a Friday. One of the commentators on there were talking about McLaren, and he sort of said, well, it was never this bad under Martin Whitmarsh. And I thought, oof, that's like a knife right through the sort of big Mr. Big Ron Dennis.
He did, poor old Martin. He was a bit of a scapegoat, wasn't he?
There was something else I heard was quite interesting with Alonso in an interview, and he said through the corners we, you know, we're losing 2-3 tenths. Yeah, on the straights we're losing 2-3 seconds, and I just blaming Honda. And of course there was a, I believe, a press conference before, was it the race
or
qualifying? Yeah,
and
got a good grilling, didn't he, Mister?
He was quite upset and looked like he was going to walk out. Apparently, at one point.
Apparently, him, Boullier and Jonathan Hill aren't talking.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that'll help.
Yeah, so that's going to push things along.
There are a lot of people there doing what you could imagine would be one job, but there we go. Well, let's move it on. Just touch on Marussia. It was their best ever qualifying, again predominantly because everyone seemed to have 100 grid place penalties, but you know, that both cars were in the top 14 for the first time since the team came on board. So well done for them.
It's an old, I think it's an old Monza race, and it was like team at the back was 8 seconds behind. I thought Marussia were like four seconds. I thought it's not bad, is it?
I like that. When was that?
Mid-90s, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
So it's not all bad, you know.
You tell them, Kyle. Damn
next
right.
Year, next year, the Mercedes engines, eh?
Yeah, race pace.
Is that right?
There's a rumour, yeah. So with Lotus, obviously, come Renault.
Yeah, true, yeah.
So another set of engines to use up, so.
Good for them. Well, they made a better fist of it than most people. Okay then, rather than the of the weekends, it's going to be the of the fortnights. So we can encapsulate a double header. Who is your driver of the fortnight? Lewis for me, because he's just dominated and he's then done loads of weird stuff away from the tracks as well. So yes, Lewis?
Yeah, you got Lewis. Yeah.
I'd also like to put a shout out for Marcus Ericsson. He has been criticised a few times. Became 9th in the last race and 10th in Spa. So, and he beat his teammate both times, which is, I mean, quite a credit to him. He's picked up from being nowhere really at the start of the season. So, I mean, a shout out to him as well.
Good work. No, I like that, Rich, because you've put more effort in than I have, certainly. Oh, that's good. Good call. Goat of the weekend, Fortnite. Who let you down? I can go for, firstly, the... Toro Rosso for not attaching Max Verstappen's bodywork properly. That's when they
shocking.
I mean, that they did get a stop go or a drive through penalty for it. Well, sure, you can't have that. You can't have the whole bodywork just flying up because you haven't attached it properly.
Because didn't he admit they sort of said, oh, we haven't got time, hopefully it'll stay on?
And
then it's like, you can't, especially, you know, unfortunately what's happened recently. Yeah. You can't do that.
Absolutely not. So there was that, and unless anyone else has got one?
Possibly you could say Rosberg. He had a bad start at Spa. He dropped a few places. Quite a few, but he was down in 10th or something, I think. And of course, this weekend, not really all his fault, but he didn't qualify great. And he did lose another place at the start, but again, you could kind of say, well, he nearly did crash into Raikkonen, but. I mean, considering what Hamilton's doing, and Rosberg should probably be doing better, to be honest.
Agree. Steve?
Yeah, I wouldn't really say anything too different to that, to be honest, really. Yeah.
The one I wanted to mention, this Honey Badger thing and Daniel Ricciardo, I don't get it. He seems to be talking about himself in the third person a lot and referring to himself as a Honey Badger, and this is because it's like Hammer Time, only it's like a real persona, and... He seems to be doing more and more of it, and like talking about it as if he's on Fight Club or some other such film. I don't get it. I don't. Can anyone help me out?
I think this is what social media is. He doing a lot through this, but because I don't really understand that.
None of us get it.
Maybe he's bored. Of finishing mid pack. I don't know.
I know that's his nickname, the Honey Badger.
Yeah.
But I think he's supposed to be doing to do with something that's a creature that isn't. It's a badger, basically, but it's apparently really vicious.
every problem I have, Carl Crutchlow in MotoGP was called the Honey Badger a few years ago, so it's not even...
It's not even original. It's not even original. So it's quite a stolen from that, you know... I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go between now and the next podcast.
Got it. Because no one says Ricciardo, do they? They say Ricciardo. So maybe he's got fed up of that himself. So I was like, right, I'm going to call myself the Honey Badger.
Daniel Honey Badger. Or maybe we should call him that. Is it a German name? No.
It was good to mention Hammer Time. It was good to hear Hammer Time back after probably a year, is it, since we last heard? Oh, we need Hammer Time laps, I think you said, yeah.
But we're not telling you why. team of the week, of the fortnights. Oh, I'll put down Ferrari because they've been doing quite well, but again, Mercedes, I suppose. And Lotus were obviously the team of the weekend in Belgium.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Lotus because they were kind of in a good position at the end of qualifying and for the start of the race. But I mean, what happened to Grosjean? I don't know what happened to Grosjean. Suspension, I think it was.
Nazar smashed the back of him, I think.
Yeah. Felipe Nazar.
So I mean, if they could have kept going, they probably would have been in for another good result, which would have been perfect for them. But also Force India had a very good weekend in Monza.
Perez
at the start of Spa was in second, challenging for the lead.
They did have a strong race, didn't they? Yeah, they love Spa, don't they, because of Fisichella and a couple of years ago.
Alright, well, Force India then as well, job done. Right, let's just round off this podcast, because we should do it before we get into looking ahead to Singapore. Is on a sad note, though, since we were last on, Justin Wilson had he died from a horrible accident in IndyCar. Guy Ligier as well, but I think he was just from old age, was it?
The fair innings.
So Guy, racing legend in Formula One, but really sad about Justin. I mean, what do you guys remember him in Formula One?
I don't, to be honest. I didn't really know who he was until I did a bit of research, which is quite sad because I mean, I don't follow IndyCar, to be honest, but and it's what, only a year after, was it
Dan Weldon?
Yeah, I mean, that was not long ago he passed away for the similar kind of thing, wasn't it? So yeah, it's another tragedy for the sport.
Indeed, and Dan Weldon had local connections to Norfolk through Van Diemen too, and it will of course bring up the closed cockpit debate again for both IndyCar and Formula One. I must admit, I had a hiatus from Formula One while Justin was racing, so I don't really remember it, but he was phenomenally successful then in IndyCar. And he's such a popular guy as well.
He's done really well, because I think he's 6'4", wasn't he? So he's sort of, it's a jockey sport, isn't it? So they sort of said how well he done there, really. And it's just a, unfortunately, it's a shame. And like I said, these cockpit discussions come up, and I quite like open cockpits, but is there a point where we need to?
I found it interesting that both David Coulthard and Alan McNish both said right now it's the time, you have a look at it and you make it happen, because you can, there's the technology to how to make that area of the car safer.
I think the trouble is with a closed cockpit, I mean, what do you then do when it's raining? You know, I mean, you're going to have some form of, like, car wipers on it, you know. I mean, who's going to want them on when it's bone dry? But then how can you tell somewhere like Spa, where it can all of a sudden quickly change to rain? You know, you've got the trouble of them steaming up. Yeah, you're going to start putting, like, aircon in so you clear the windscreen, you know.
Would Kimi find that button?
And then you've got the concerns, you know. I mean, if the car flips over or something, or you know, if it catches fire and they've got to get out, you've got to have some sort of detachable bit to it. And then there's the aerodynamics of it as well. I think it's just something that we should just accept. There's always an element of danger with motorsport. You can't possibly make it invincible. I think we should just leave it open.
Fair enough. That's a debate that will rumble on long beyond this podcast. But we're going to call it quits there, and we'll come back for a pre-Singapore podcast in a bit. But for now, thank you, Rich. Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you to all of you out there for listening. Don't forget, you can keep in touch with us via Twitter at the NRF1. I remember that time, Rich. We've got a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NRF1podcast, I think. You can email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com, if you want to get involved. We've had a few new predictions in. We've also got the website, which sort of went wrong a bit for some reason. I can't really explain. I haven't really figured it out. But it is still there and working, and it will be getting some improvements, hopefully, over the coming weeks. But that is nrf1.uk. Lots of blogs there. Although I can't ask anyone else to blog because I haven't written one myself pretty much all year. So, but if you want to write blog for us, then just drop us an email, get in touch, have a look at the website, and these guys will be getting their latest blogs up on there too. But I think that's everything. Thanks again, gents. We will be back with a pre-Singapore podcast over the coming days. Until then, bye for now.
Overtime, moss, mold, and mildew stains cover your home, and cleaning them is too much work. You need Wet and Forget, the easy, bleach-free way to clean tough outdoor stains. For decks, patios, and cushions, use Wet and Forget outdoor spaces. No scrubbing, no rinsing. Just apply and let it do the work for you over time. Got a bigger job? Reach second-story siding and roofs with Outdoor Max. Up to a 30-foot reach and 2x the coverage. Get Wet and Forget at Home Depot, Lowe's, and Walmart.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big.